or the danger in giving such a thing a name. There were stories about swords that held against all odds, and others that tended to slip and bite their wielder. But Salcente never seemed to heed the warning. Travelers cleansed their weapons after each life taken, and discarded the blades of dead men. Tyr's sword was old. Newly sensitized, Seraph could feel its hunger for Tyr's hand and battle, even though it lay several handspans from her skirts. But the Tyr the sword longed for was a version of her husband Seraph had never seen. A cold-faced killer, who let his sword drink its fill of blood. Seraph touched the bridle again, running her fingers over the blue and red beads on the brow band, lingering on the bit. After a moment, she felt a dullness, the bare touch of Lair's grief as he held the bridle, a dusting of time lacking in power, as if the bridle, bit and all, had somehow come into being just a few days ago. "Nothing," Seraph growled in frustration, her hand fisted on a scrap of leather, both hand and leather glowing with power. But there was no flash of vision, only emptiness, as if whatever trap Tyr had sprung had wiped the bridal's history clean. "What does it mean?" asked Lair. She shook her head. "I don't know. Tyr's death should be emblazoned upon the bridal. I haven't done this in a very long time, but I didn't have any trouble reading the sword." "It was shadow blight," Lair reminded her. "Maybe the shadow's magic affected it." Seraph frowned. It felt as if the bridal had been wiped clean of its past, not blasted with magic. "Fire or running water can clean something of its past. I suppose shadow blight might do the same." Weary in spirit more than body, Seraph rubbed her face. "Jess, could you put Papa's sword in its sheath and then put it away?" She didn't want to touch it again. Logically, she shouldn't sense anything unless she looked for it, but she could feel it waiting. "We'd better get to sleep. Tomorrow, you two will have to start plowing. I will take word of Tyr's death to your aunt and uncle." Seraph waited until they were all asleep before sneaking out. She used enough magic to keep from disturbing Jess or Gura, both still curled up before the coals of the fire. She walked until she was far from the cabin. The ground was uncomfortably cold on her bare feet. When she stopped, she bowed her head against the rough bark of a tree, seeking the peace resident in its stolid, slow-growing, long-lived presence. But all she felt was rage. It seethed from the soles of her feet and coiled through her body until it was forced into the long strands of her hair. Her hands shook with it as they curled and clawed at the hapless tree. Her breath left her throat in a low, moaning growl. And with the rage came magic, destructive and hot, and as aimless as her wrath, because the focus of her anger, of her pain, was dead. "Tyr," she whispered, and then in a voice of power that shook the ground under her feet, she asked, "Why did you leave me?" "Listen to Jess," Seraph told Lair the next morning. "He'll take care of Skew and see that he doesn't overdo. Skew's going to have to do the whole field, and you'll have to watch to see that he doesn't hurt himself." "Yes, Mother," said Lair patiently. Seraph was pale, tired, and obviously dreading the trip into town, and he didn't blame her. "Rennie, make sure to run water out to the boys a couple of times this morning. That's more important than getting the garden done."
"Yes, Mother,"
said Rennie in such a blatant imitation of Lair's tone that he had to turn aside so no one saw his grin. "Right." Seraph gave a quick nod. "I should be back in time to fix the midday meal, but if not, there is bread, honey, and cheese." With that, she turned on her heel and began walking briskly up the path toward town, leaving her children to begin their assigned tasks. They rested Skew rather more often than Lair would have, but he let Jess decide when to stop. After each rest, Lair and Jess traded who held the plow. The soil was somewhat rocky, and the plow bucked and wallowed unexpectedly, until they were as tired as the horse. By mid-morning, Skew's head was low, and sweat washed out from under his harness. They'd made some headway. 5 mostly straight furrows in, and 23 more to go. Lair walked beside Jess, whose turn it was to hold the handles. The long reins trailed through the metal hoops in the harness down Skew's back and wrapped around Jess's shoulders, so when he stopped, so did Skew. "He can't be tired again," protested Lair. "We haven't come 50 paces since the last rest."
"Hush," commanded Jess.
Lair had quit looking for the stranger inside his brother about halfway up the first furrow, but he saw him now. Abruptly, Lair realized how still the land was. Not a bird sang, not a cricket chirruped. Silently, he unbuckled the sheath that held his long knife and rested his hand on its haft. The forest seemed somehow darker than it had been just a moment earlier. Skew's head came up, and he tested the wind with fluttering nostrils. Tossing his mane uneasily, he whickered once. Whatever it was that Lair was watching for, it wasn't the man who stepped out of the woods. He was slight and dark, but otherwise unremarkable, until Lair met his gaze. Fathomless black eyes examined him coolly, and the hair on the back of Lair's neck crawled.
"Hunter," said the stranger.
Lair's eyes told him that the man in front of him was a nondescript man dressed more or less like any other man to be found wandering in the woods. But another sense was ringing like an alarm bell, warning him that he stood before a power. Skew shoved his nose against Lair's arm and breathed in little huffs, ears pinned forward as if he perceived some threat and readied himself to do battle. Lair glanced at Jess, who stood at his back, watching the stranger steadily, but without tension. Turning back to the man, Lair half-bowed because it felt as if he should. "Sir, what can we do for you?" The man smiled, but his 2 knowing eyes stayed cold and clear like the river in winter.
"I found a child wandering my forest alone. She smells like one of yours, so I thought I would offer her to you rather than the wolves."
"Rinny?" asked Jess, glancing toward their home. But when Lair looked too, Rinny was plainly visible planting the kitchen garden with Gura stretched out nearby.
"Go ahead, Jess," said Lair. "I'll keep at the fields until you get back. She's probably one of the villagers, so you might have to take her all the way to Redern."
Jess ducked out of the reins and followed the dark man into the woods without a word. Lair remained by Skew's head until the gelding quit staring into the trees. Rubbing under Skew's brow band where the sweat gathered, Lair spoke quietly to the horse.
"I believe you and I have just met the Forest King. I always thought he was just a fancy of Jess's."
So many strange things had happened in the past few days that the Forest King rated no more than a shake of the head before Lair turned to take up the plow again. The guardian paced beside the boar who was the Forest King and tested the area for threat. Finding none, he allowed his ire full sway.
"You will leave my brother alone,"
the guardian said in a voice that held the winter winds. The boar snorted, unimpressed.
"Why would I do that? Your brother's ties to the forest are closer than yours. Something has happened to him to make him aware of his power. If I had called you today as I usually do, he would have heard me. It was time to acknowledge the hunter. I cannot say I welcome him, for it is my job to protect those within my realm. But your brother has long hunted these forests, and he does not kill indiscriminately. Death is seldom a welcome guest, but it has a place in the life of the forest."
"Just leave him alone. He takes on enough without you."
The boar laughed,
his hoarse voice squealing high in merriment.
Am I so chance a comrade then, Jess?
Who is being dragged through the forest at your whim?
Returned the guardian roundly.
I should be helping my brother coax skew over the fields rather than chasing off after some child.
Not that kind of child, grunted the boar, scrambling over a largish log in his path. I believe that she's older than you.
He seemed to find amusement in something, for he snorted a while before continuing.
Child of travelers she is, though not exactly like you or your brother either. She passed me by as I was eating my breakfast this morning, and the smell of her magic intrigued me. So I followed her.
The guardian waited until he was certain the boar wouldn't continue without prompting.
Where did she go?
Through my lands, said the forest king. I almost stopped at the border, but by then I was curious. I followed her to a place where magic blackened the ground, and a new rip in the earth contained the body of a horse. A gray mare who used to graze in your fields.
You know where my father was killed? Said the guardian slowly.
Your father is dead?
The boar considered it a moment.
I tell you what I saw. It is up to you to discover what you'll take from it. But first, you must deal with the child. Or allow me to do so.
The guardian knew how the boar would deal with one he must have decided might be a threat. The guardian recognized the same grim spirit lived inside of him as well, though he'd never killed anyone. Not yet. Never wanted to kill anyone, because he was afraid that by that act, something the daytime Jess could not comprehend, he would somehow sever the ties that held the two disparate parts of himself together.
What did you find at my father's grave?
Asked the guardian.
My mother thinks that there was more to his death than we have been told.
Your mother may be right, said the forest king, but that is not for my judgment.
By this time, the guardian was fairly confident he knew where the forest king was taking him. There weren't actually all that many places to store a person safely in the woods without worrying what might happen to them. Even for a spirit as powerful as the Forest King. The old building was so covered in vines and surrounded by trees that it was impossible to see from the outside. It was, as far as he knew, the only building he'd ever been in that had been built before the reign of the Shadowed. The only entrance required some undignified scrambling for anything larger than the boar. Not knowing exactly what he would face, the guardian chose to stay in human form and crawled under the foliage through the crumbling tunnel that had once held water and still bore the mark of ancient algae. Inside, the boar waited with bright red eyes that glittered in the dark interior, standing over a sleeping person who certainly was no child. Pale traveler's hair looked more silver than ash in the faint light that poured in through the leaves that guarded the barren rafters that must once have been thatched.
Traveler,
said the guardian, crouching down and pushing her hair aside to reassure himself that it wasn't his mother who lay there. But the features of the woman who lay sleeping in the Forest King's lair were those of a stranger, younger than his mother, but as the boar had said, older than Jess was.
You say she came from town?
Yes, she came from the town. Walked almost directly to the place where the horse lay dead, then started back.
He paused.
She wasn't going back to town.
Where then?
Asked the guardian. The boar stared at the sleeping woman.
It looked to me as if she were headed directly toward your home. But there is dark magic about her and power. Her path would have taken her through the heart of my lands, and I decided I preferred that she not trespass unguarded.
The guardian contemplated the woman. Was it someone his mother knew? Seraph hadn't mentioned finding another traveler in the village the day before yesterday. Surely she would have said something if she had.
Will you awaken her?
Said the guardian, finally deciding that her mysteries would be better answered by the woman herself.
Or do you wish me to take her away from this place first?
Take her.
The Forest King turned back toward the entrance of the building.
When you are far enough from here, I'll lift the sleep from her.
The guardian sighed. Though the woman was slight, the tunnel was narrow. Still, he gathered her up and scrambled his way out with only a few extra bruises. On him. He managed to keep her safe from harm. In the sunlight, he could see what features she shared with his mother and what differences marked her. His mother was a smaller woman, and this woman had a thinner, longer nose that gave her face an arrogant beauty. He'd never seen anyone except his family, who bore traveler blood. He wondered where her people were, if they were among those who were killed, or if they awaited her somewhere. Walking in the woods with the sun on his back, Jess slowly filtered into being, easing the guardian to sleep. Untroubled by his burden, he continued on toward home. Mother would know what to do with her. They were close to the edge of the woods when she stiffened. He glanced down at her and saw that her eyes were open. He smiled into pale eyes that matched her hair and continued on, ignoring her attempts to get down. If she were on foot, it would be harder to bring her home, and Jess knew that he needed to take her home so she would be safe from the Forest King. When she couldn't free herself, she began asking him rapid questions that ran through his ears like rain, first in words he could have understood if he'd bothered, then in the liquid, silver tongue that his mother used sometimes when she was very angry or very sad. "Hush," he said, shaking his head, and he began humming the song his mother had used to sing Rinnie to sleep when she was a babe and fretting in the night. She stilled at his song, then said slowly, "Who are you?"
"Jess," he said.
She stared at him a moment. "I can walk." He hesitated.
"You have to come with me."
"I'll come with you, but let me walk." He set her down then, but kept a grip on her hand because he liked the way it felt. She was closed down so he didn't feel the annoying buzzing of her thoughts, just the warmth of her skin. His mother could do that too. "You don't look traveler," she said, almost to herself.
"Mother's a traveler," he replied. "Papa's a Redurney."
"What happened to me?" But he'd said as much as he was going to. It was too complex, and he couldn't be bothered explaining everything. He shook his head at her and continued toward home. The field they'd been plowing was empty, the plowshare raised out of the ground and cleaned of soil and dampness to keep it free of rust. If it had looked like rain, Laird have brought it in. With a glance at the sky, Jess measured the time he'd spent in the woods. As usual, it was longer than he'd thought, but not so long that Lair should be finished plowing. Something must have happened to skew. He started to increase his pace, but slowed when the woman stumbled beside him. She didn't have the knack of walking over plowed ground. He swooped, picked her up, and carried her over their field. Remembering her request, though, he set her down on the other side and continued his determined course to the barn. Lair carried a heavy, steaming bucket to the barn and was oblivious to them until Jess called out his name. Lair halted and set down the bucket.
"Jess, I thought you were out looking for a child."
Jess frowned.
"I found her in the woods,"
he said, because it somehow fit Lair's questions.
"Is something wrong with Skew?"
"No, no," his brother automatically soothed, staring at the woman. "He's fine. But he was so tired I thought it would be better to stop. I'm bringing him some hot bran mash, and Rinnie's giving him a rub down so he's not so stiff and sore tomorrow." He frowned.
"Jess, who is this?"
Jess frowned back, though he knew his frown wasn't as impressive as Lair's.
"This is the one I was sent for," he said.
Lair smiled suddenly and shook his head. "All right, Jess. Good afternoon, lady. I am Lair Tyrogenson.
You've already met my brother Jess.
The stranger he'd brought back with him tugged at Jess's hand gently, and he released her.
I am called Hinea, she said. I am looking for the traveler called Seraph.
This one went to where father was killed, said Jess,
because the guardian reminded him that it was important.
The forest king followed her, and then held her for us. He thought she was coming here, which was fine with him.
So why did he send for you?
Asked Lair after a moment, and the woman, Hinea, looked as if she'd like to know too. Jess sighed.
I'm not sure.
But it was something Mother should know, and Lair would remember to tell her. So he prodded the guardian, who could make a better answer. Lair took a step back when the guardian came, and that made Jess sad. The guardian didn't like frightening his family.
The forest king said that she had dark magic and power, and he didn't want her in his territory.
Jess came back quickly, because the guardian was unpredictable and might decide that the woman could be a threat to his territory too. Jess didn't want him to scare her because he liked her.
Dark magic? Asked Lair with a look at Hinea.
She put out her hand and showed him her wrist and tapped on the bracelet there. Jess didn't like it, nor did the guardian. It smelled wrong.
I expect that he's talking about this. Who is the Forest King?
Lair smiled suddenly and shrugged.
I don't know, actually. I thought he was a story that Jess made up until I met him today.
He turned to Jess. Who is the Forest King? Jess squirmed, uncomfortable with all the attention that they had been paying him. The guardian didn't like people looking at him too much.
He's the Forest King, he mumbled,
almost forgetting the question in his discomfort. Lair seemed to sense how Jess was feeling, because he said,
Come with me,
picked up the bucket, and continued out to the barn. Depressed and weary of both grief and anger, Seraph almost didn't notice that there was something wrong as she walked up to her cabin. Alanath had already heard about Tyr. Forder had stayed overnight in Redurne and spread the news. She'd approached Alanath expecting to deal with shock and grief, but found Tyr's sister waiting for her with anger and blame instead. It was only when Gura didn't greet her that Seraph set the stress of the unhappy meeting she'd had with Alanath aside and looked around. The boys weren't in the field, and Rinny wasn't working in the garden. She whistled and was rewarded with a bark, and Gura dashed out of the barn to welcome her with a woof of apology for his tardiness. He followed at her heels as she headed for the barn.
Something must have happened to Skew, she thought.
The interior of the barn was dim in comparison to the afternoon light, so she was still half-blind when she heard Lair say,
Here she is now. Mother, we have a visitor.
As her vision cleared, Seraph saw Skew with his head buried in a grain bucket. Rinny was standing next to him with a brush in her hand. Jess slouched against the barn wall a few feet from Lair and a woman. A traveler woman wearing a Salcenti dress, who stared at Seraph with pale eyes. Seraph felt her eyebrows climb in surprise and instinctive dismay. She had enough trouble on her hands, and a lone traveler could only be bringing more.
I am Hinea, the woman said, raven of the clan of Rivelaine Moonhaired.
Seraph, raven of the clan of Isolde the Silent, replied Seraph.
She waited, and Lair obliged her.
Jess's forest king came this morning, he said, sounding a bit bemused. He told us that there was a child loose in the woods and asked Jess to fetch her. Jess brought Hinea back. He told me that the forest king didn't want her in his territory because she held dark magic and power.
This is dark magic, said Hinea, holding up her wrist. Seraph closed the distance between them and set her hands on either side of the leather and bead bracelet.
Salcenti wizardry, she said shortly. Aegeus?
Hinea nodded.
Yes,
Seraph knew of only one wizard anywhere near Redurn.
Volus the priest has bound you to his service?
Hanea smiled faintly.
Yes.
He'd been hiding her then. Seraph had not the slightest doubt that if any of the villagers knew that there was another traveler in the vicinity, they would have told her so.
I can help you rid yourself of this.
Seraph didn't know the exact method, but she was confident it would be in one of Isolde's books. Wizards of Isolde's time had been fond of binding others to their services. Any spell that could break a spell woven by the Colossi wizards could be adapted to sever the bonds of a Solcenti wizard without too much trouble.
No, said Hanea, curling her hand into a fist. Not yet. When the time comes, I will rid myself of it.
Jess said the Forest King told him that she went directly from Adurn to the place where Father was killed. From there, he thought that she was trying to reach us. Lair's voice was neutral.
Ah, said Seraph, narrowing her eyes at the other woman. Why don't you tell me more about yourself, Hanea, Raven of Rivelaine Moonhaired?
Thank you, said Hanea, who appeared to have been waiting for Seraph's invitation. I am no owl, so I ask that you bear with my tale as I tell it. 2 years ago, I and my lover, who was a raven, and my student, were taken by Solcenti wizards who bound us with raven magics.
How could Solcenti bind with raven magic?
Hanea paused as if she expected Seraph to ask, but Seraph seldom interrupted. Doubtless, it was a question to be addressed later in Hanea's story. When Seraph said nothing, Hanea continued. We were taken to some sort of stronghold where these wizards, there were six of them, and some greater number of lesser wizardlings, performed a ritual of magic upon me. She stopped again, but Seraph didn't think it had anything to do with her audience. It looked more as if she were fighting the memory's hold. Her hands were clenched at her side, and sweat gathered on her forehead. Jess stepped forward and set a hand on Hanea's shoulder, the unexpected action telling Seraph that the Guardian had accepted Hanea.
Are the details of the spell important now? Asked Seraph more gently than she'd first intended.
Not now, said Hanea. Only that their magic failed. They blamed the failure on one wizard who had not done the spell before, Volus. They coached him, and tried three more times. After the last time, they conceded that the spell had been performed perfectly, but that something about the way it had been misworked the first time had rendered me an unfit subject. So they took Moselm, he who was my student.
She was breathing heavier now, and Seraph saw her blink hard.
I didn't even notice it first. I was too wrapped up in my own pain. But then he began screaming and screaming.
She closed her eyes briefly, as if that could shut out the sound. With her eyes closed, Hanea looked very young. Seraph had thought her 10 years older than Jess, but she wasn't so certain now.
When they finished with him, Hanea said, they took him out of the room, still screaming. I never saw him again. I didn't even know what their spellcasting did because I was too raw from what they had done to me.
She gave Seraph a bitter smile. These wizards were as confident as if they had come fresh from Colossi. They talked of killing me, as I was no good for their purposes. But the young wizard, Volus, who is the priest of their twisted religion here, asked if he might keep me to see if he could discover what he had done. So they let him bind me with this. She held up her wrist and made me his plaything. I accused them of arrogance, she said. But I was arrogant, too. I could have broken free of this Gius. It might hold a Solcenti wizard or even a traveler who is not raven, but as you have seen, it will not hold a raven long. But they presented a puzzle to me. How had Solcenti wizards worked raven magic? Even more worrisome, I didn't think that we were the first ravens they had taken. They knew too well how to neutralize anything I might have done for my defense. And with the exception of Volus, they had all performed their ritual before. I reasoned that whatever they had done to Moselm, it had already been done.
If I could reverse it, I could reverse it later as well, after I discovered what they were doing.
So you waited, said Seraph.
Hanea nodded. For a year or so, I bided my time and learned what I could. We were in Taella, secreted within the Emperor's own palace. The wizards ruled over a group of Salcenti called the Secret Path of the Five Gods. I saw only the wizards, who are relatively few, but there are apparently many others, all men, noblemen and high-ranked merchants and the like, men of power.
Volus seemed sincere in his devotion, said Seraph. Obsessive, even. Not a man who is seeking after political power.
Hanea nodded. Oh, they take themselves very seriously, including this religion that someone thought up a few centuries or so ago as a way to encourage bored young noblemen to join up. Can you think of anything a young man would like better than to shock his family? Worshipping like a traveler is beyond offensive.
Travelers don't worship gods, said Rinnie, who'd been brushing skew as Hanea talked.
No, indeed, agreed Hanea. But Volus doesn't believe that. We travelers like to keep our secrets, and he thinks he knows them. He likes me to spout his own theories back to him. I don't think he really knows how this Geas really works. He thought it made...
She glanced over her shoulder at Rinnie and gave Seraph an ironic smile.
Made us friends. But he likes to believe in lies. One night, while we were still in Taella, he came into his rooms a little worse for drink. Something he seldom did. He was wearing a crude ring made of silver and rose quartz and reeking of tainted magic.
She sat down abruptly on the small bench Rinnie used as a mounting block.
Unto Raven, it is given to know the order, she whispered. Somehow they had stolen Moselm's order and put it into the ring. Volus was drunk from celebrating Moselm's death and worried because it hadn't gone quite as planned. It seems that capturing the order once it's taken from a traveler is very difficult and sometimes fails.
They did what? Asked Seraph, appalled.
They killed him and retained the power of the order in the stone, said Hanea with raven calm. Their spell slowly rips the order away from a traveler over a period of some months. Many of the stones are all but useless, but the ones that work can be worn in a ring or necklace. Then the Salcenti wizards become raven, falcon, or cormorant as they wish.
Dread closed Seraph's throat. It was starting again, as if the Memori had been harbingers of things to come. Tyr had died, and now Seraph would be forced to live as she had before she met him. I don't know what I can do to help you, she said at last, because in the end, there was no choice. I can take a message to the clans, though I don't know where any are at present. I will give you what aid I can.
You don't understand, Hanea said. I've come to help you.
Chapter 6 You are going to help me? Asked Seraph. With what?
Hanea smiled grimly. Your new sept travels with quite an entourage.
Including you and Volus, Seraph said. Is the sept one of the... What did you call them? Something stupid. The secret path?
The sept, she said. No, not him. At least I don't think so. He's charismatic. The Emperor's best, if not only, friend. And he's very good at political games. No one is surprised at the number of people who follow him around. Volus said that someone called in a few debts and offered a favor or two so that the sept would agree to build a temple of the five gods here.
Hanea stood up and began pacing in abrupt, quick steps.
The secret path decided to bring the religion out into the public. They don't tell people that they get their five gods from the traveler's orders, of course.
There are six orders, observed Rinnie.
They don't know about the guardian, said Jess. Travelers don't talk about their mistakes.
You are not a mistake, said Seraph.
though Jess was more right than wrong about the Traveler's reasoning regarding the Guardians. Travelers protect the Guardians' secrets, because your order works better that way. As if that settled the matter, Seraph turned back to Hanea and sorted through her story for some way to change the subject.
Why did this path of yours change and decide to bring their church to the masses?
Hanea shook her head. I don't know. Volus thinks that it's because the truth must be made known. But Volus wouldn't know the truth if it tore his throat out. I don't think that all of the wizards believe in their made-up gods, so there must be another reason.
Volus told me they chose to set his temple here because of Shadow's Fall.
I've heard him say that too, agreed Hanea. I don't know what they want with Shadow's Fall, but I suppose that whatever power still lurks there can defend itself more than adequately.
Indeed, said Seraph. My husband is proof of that.
No, said Hanea. I don't think that he is.
Seraph stiffened. Oh? She said softly.
There were some wizards who traveled with us from Taela. They stayed with the Sept when Volus moved us into the new temple.
She stopped her pacing to frown down at Seraph.
Understand, please, that I've had to take a few facts and string them together. A few days ago, Volus got some correspondence from Taela. It wasn't signed, but from the content, I think that it was from one of the wizards who came here with us. The letter devoted an entire paragraph to your family. Unless there is another family with a raven, falcon, and cormorant.
No, said Seraph softly.
Hanea nodded once and began to pace again. Someone's taken a raven's eye to your home, and a real raven would know that you had a guardian too. So it must have been one of the Path's wizards wearing one of their stones.
Seraph nodded.
I'd been listening to talk since we came here, and I heard of a traveler mage married to a Salcenti farmer. Since it was unlikely that any other travelers had settled here, I could only suppose that you'd been blessed with two ordered children, half-blood or not. I decided to warn you as soon as I could, though there seemed to be no particular urgency. Then, last night, a man came to tell Volus that your husband's dead horse had been found with a few human bones. Tears dead, they said, and they mourned the loss of his music.
Hanea stopped again, rubbing her wrist absently.
And I thought on that letter I'd read. The first line read, We have the owl safe here.
Seraph froze as her heart leapt to her throat. By Lark and Raven, she said, imbuing the words with compulsion. Do not mislead me on this.
Hanea nodded to herself in satisfaction. Your husband was traveler and owl, and they took him to Taela to work their magic on him.
My husband was Rajerni born and bred, but given to the order of owl, corrected Seraph absently to give herself time to regain control.
Tyr was alive?
If there was traveler blood in his lineage, it was a long time ago.
Ah, said Hanea, revealing mild surprise. I've never heard of something like that.
She rubbed her wrist again.
Anyway, I waited until Volus left on business this morning and set out to find the place where the huntsman found your husband's horse. It wasn't difficult to follow the huntsman's trail.
What did you find? Asked Seraph, her voice so soft that Lair shifted uncomfortably.
Hanea shook her head. Not much.
She shivered and clenched her hand over her wrist where Volus's Gyas band held her.
I have to get back soon.
She straightened slightly and continued.
The huntsman and his men buried both the horse and the skull, and I had no means to dig them up. I found hints of old magic, but nothing that would cause a person's death. There were a few tracks, but I'm not a falcon to be certain of anything the tracks could tell.
Lair is, said Rinny.
Yes, said Hanea. I know.
I had hoped to prove my suspicions before I talked to you. But I'm unlikely to get a chance to come so far again. Take your falcon and find out what they did. Then come and help me deal with Volus. And I'll help you find your husband.
I don't like leaving Rinny alone, said Lair as he led Seraph through the partially plowed field.
She'll be safe with Gura, Seraph said, though she wasn't happy with it either. And Jess will be back soon.
She'd certainly be safer at home than investigating a place that might have been shadow-blighted. If Seraph hadn't needed Lair's help, she'd have found some way to leave him behind too. Jess, she'd found excuses to send off with Hanea. The Forest King's territory extended on either side of the trail to town, but Jess thought that as long as he was with her, the Forest King wouldn't stop Hanea a second time. The Geas had obviously been very painful by the time they'd left. Jess could get Hanea back to the temple sooner than if she had to find her way herself. So now she only had to risk one of her children to find out if Hanea had been right. Tyr was alive. Seraph was too much a raven to allow herself to believe it without more proof, but even so, the thought thrummed through her. She would have the chance to save him, as she hadn't been able to save Ushire.
"There's two places I could pick up the trail," Lair said. "But knowing Jess, I thought that it might be shorter to follow the path he took with the Forest King than to try and follow the trail he made bringing Hanea back."
"You're the hunter," Seraph said. "I trust you." Lair stopped where the field turned to forest.
"The Forest King came here," he said,
but he didn't immediately start on the trail, just stared at the ground.
"Are you certain that I'm a hunter? Papa can track as well as I can."
He didn't look at her as he spoke. Lair, she thought, saw beyond the power to the cost of acknowledging his traveler blood. He knew that a falcon could never belong to Redurn.
"It doesn't matter," she said gently. "We just need to track Jess to where he found the girl, then follow her trail to where the huntsman found whatever he found."
"Right," he said,
and started through the forest. Seraph followed Lair's rapid gait with an effort, but made no complaint. The afternoon was well spent, and he would need light to track. Whatever he hoped, she could feel the hum of magic as it passed from him and seeped into the woods around her. She had learned basic tracking skills herself, but she could see no sign of bent grass or footprint in the trail Lair followed. She doubted that anyone but a hunter could have followed the Forest King through his own territory. But she said nothing of it. Lair would have to accept his abilities in his own way, or not. When Lair began a steady jog, Seraph left off her musings and concentrated on keeping up with him. He ran a mile or so before dropping back to a walk in a glade of wild wheat edged by forest on three sides and a formidable rock formation on the other.
"I think this is where Jess picked up the girl," he said, glancing around at the ground.
He turned his back to the stone formation and knelt in the thick, spring-short grass.
"There are several sets of his tracks. Do you see how much deeper Jess's print is here than it usually is?"
A branch moved behind his head. Seraph hissed a warning and called her magic.
"Now, there is no need for that, Raven," said the man who rolled nimbly out from under a particularly thick area of foliage that gathered in front of the stone formation. "It is you who have invaded my home, not the other way around."
Lair got to his feet and dusted off the knee of his breeches.
"Mother," he said, "this is Jess's Forest King."
He looked more like a grubby farmer fallen on hard times, thought Seraph. The tunic he wore was patched on top of older patches. His feet were bare, and his hands were the knobby-knuckled, dark-nailed hands of a man who had worked the land. She'd always wanted to see Jess's friend, and on any other day she would have had a number of questions for him. But nothing mattered except Tyr. Seraph bowed her head shallowly so she could keep her eyes on him.
"We are sorry to disturb you," she said. "We are following the woman's tracks to the place where my husband's horse died."
"You won't find it trying to track her from here, Hunter. I didn't bring her by ways you can follow."
The Forest King grinned, revealing yellowing teeth that looked sharp, and his eyes stayed cold and watchful.
"The place you speak of is outside my realm, but you can follow the girl's tracks starting from the big waterfall. Let me loan you a guide."
He turned and looked at the brush behind him. It shuddered briefly. Then a rangy vixen emerged. Seraph felt no magic, though beside her, Lair stiffened as if he heard something odd. But the vixen stared at the bedraggled Forest King as if he were talking to her, before setting out at a trot without looking at Seraph or Lair. The Forest King waved his hand at the fox.
"Follow her. She won't wait."
"My thanks."
Seraph bowed again and started out after Lair, who was already headed deeper into the forest. It was chilly near the falls where the cold river water was pounded to vapor at the bottom of its descent. The fox shifted nervously while Lair paced by the river. The moment he found Hinea's trail and knelt beside it, she left without waiting for gratitude. Lair rose to his feet and set out at a gait scarcely slower than he'd used to follow the fox. Even so, the sun was low when they broke free of the trees at last and began climbing a narrow path up the rock-strewn side of a mountain.
"Lots of traffic here," said Lair, pointing at a rock scored by a shod hoof. "More than usual for such a remote place."
"Haneo was here," Seraph reminded him. "The huntsman and his men."
Lair shook his head.
"More people than that have been here. Some of the tracks are pretty faint, but I'd say 5 or 6 horsemen were here a month or more ago. Their tracks go up the mountain and back down again. Isn't that what we're looking for?"
Seraph nodded.
"If you find anything that might have belonged to them, a bit of cloth or hair, get it for me."
She wiped the sweat from her face to clear her eyes.
"I can use it to get more information."
"Like you did from Frost's bridle."
Lair began moving again, but only at a walk. His change of pace might have been to allow him to observe the tracks more clearly, but Seraph suspected it was more likely to allow her to catch her breath. They didn't slow long, and after a few miles, Lair seemed to forget she was there. The trail he followed snaked across the foothills and into the crevices of the ragged mountains. Seraph's calves ached, then burned as they hadn't since her traveling days. Farming was hard, but climbing at a jog in the mountains was a different sort of work. Lair didn't seem bothered by it, even though he wore the pack she'd filled with things they might need. When Lair stopped, she wondered if he were finally getting tired, but then she really looked at where they were. The deer trail they'd been following had widened into a piece of open, level ground as big as the kitchen garden. In the center of the cleared area, a waist-high white rock with an unusual flat top broke through the dirt. The grass in the clearing was knee-high, unusually tall for this time of year this high in the mountains. It carpeted the ground in dark, bitter green, except for a large mound of disturbed earth to one side, a burial mound large enough for a horse.
"Why did they bury the horse?" asked Lair.
"Sometimes," said Seraph, "the blighted places can recharge their magics. The bodies will tend to attract people or animals, and it's best to get them safely buried. There are also stories about odd things happening to the bodies of people who die of shadow blight. Things that don't happen if the bodies are safely buried."
"Weren't they afraid of the magic?"
"Maybe," said Seraph. There are a lot of Redurni who can sense magic, especially the ones who spend a lot of time out in the mountains. Maybe because in earlier times, when the Shadowed's hand was heavier on the mountains, the people who couldn't sense the blighted areas didn't survive. Tyr had said that he could sense such places. She pushed Hope away and said, "There isn't any magic that I can feel now." Likely the huntsman felt the same. "Take a look around, would you, and tell me what you find?" Lair nodded, then stopped. "Do you believe her, mother?" he said, his voice tight. "Do you believe Papa might be alive?" "I don't know," she said, because it was the answer that would hurt him the least. Seraph took a deep breath. "This doesn't feel like one of the blighted places to me. Hanea said there was old magic here, but I can't sense it."
"What does that mean?" he asked.
She shook her head. "I think I would sense anything that had lasted here from the time of the Shadowed's fall, especially power still strong enough to kill."
"So this is not a Shadowed place?"
Seraph nodded slowly. "A month is long enough to dissipate Solcenti magic," she said, and then forced herself to point out the obvious to both of them. "Just because it was not old magic that killed here doesn't mean that those Solcenti wizards of Hanea's didn't kill Tyr outright. I need you to look and see if you can tell what happened when Frost was killed here. Remember to look especially closely for any scrap of hair or clothing that I might be able to read." She moved back to the edge of the clearing as he began to quarter it thoroughly.
"The clearest thing I see," he said at last, "is that something burned here. You can see where the earth was scorched. The patch goes all the way around the grave. See here where the grass is a bit shorter?"
She nodded.
"It looks to me that there have been three groups of people here recently," he said. "The most recent was Jess's Hanea. She walked the meadow just like I did. Stopped there."
He pointed to a place just to the right of the large stone.
"And stopped again to press her hand into the dirt mound. Then she left. The party who came before her was here a few days ago. Three horsemen. One of them was the huntsman. See the way that off four is angled?"
He didn't look at her, so Seraph didn't bother shaking her head.
"That's the horse he was riding when he came to tell us what he'd found. The earliest group, though, is what we're interested in, and they worked at hiding their tracks. They were here after the snow started to melt, so no earlier than a month and a half ago. I can't tell you how many of them there were here for certain, but they were here about the same time as Papa."
Lair gestured for Seraph to follow him and led her to the far side of the clearing through a thicket of elderberry to a stand of trees.
"He saw them, Mother," said Lair. "He stopped Frost here for a while and watched them. Maybe for as long as a quarter of an hour. See how Frost stood here, shifting her weight?"
He turned and walked back the way they came without taking his eyes from the ground.
"Then he walked Frost out into the clearing. There was no fighting or scuffle that I can see, but Frost's prints are lost in this burnt area."
He glanced around again.
"I can pick up the tracks of the other men lower down and backtrack them."
"We'll do that if necessary," said Seraph. "Did you find anything they left behind?" He shook his head.
"Nothing. I'm sorry I couldn't find out anything more. Are we done now?"
"Just beginning," Seraph answered. "Give me your pack," she said. There was a camp shovel tied to the back, and she took it. "Now we dig."
"You're looking for something that can tell you what happened?" asked Lair. "Like the saddle or Papa's pack?"
"If there's something to read, I'll try. but mostly I'm looking for the human bones the huntsman buried with Frost. Before she set cold iron to earth, she touched the dirt, trying to find the old magic that Hanea had spoken of.
There's death here, she said, sudden and painful.
Papa? He asked.
I don't know,
Seraph replied, rubbing the grains between her fingers.
Ravens are not necromancers.
She got to her feet and started digging with the shovel, refusing Lair's help. This was not something for children, no matter that the child in question was a foot taller and almost twice her weight. She dug until the metal edge of the shovel blade bounced off bone. They hadn't buried Frost very deep, but a horse is a large animal. Scraping gently with the blade, she pushed away dirt and saw, beneath a coating of soil and ash, the familiar pattern of Frost's dapples.
Let me, Mother, said Lair, taking the shovel from her.
He shouldn't have been able to read anything from her face, but he was almost as sensitive as Jess or Tyr. She was too tired from the trip here, from digging, from hope and fear, to fight him.
If we're lucky, Lair said as he began digging, they'd have set the skull beside the horse and not beneath her. We don't have ropes and horses to move Frost the way the huntsman did.
I can move her if we have to, said Seraph, not as certain as she sounded. But I'd rather not add more magic here until I've sifted all the information the grave contains.
He probed the disturbed ground and uncovered, little by little, Frost's poor, burnt corpse. As the huntsman had said, her head and neck had been charred to the bone, with just enough tissue to hold the vertebrae together. But the hindquarters were almost intact, left that way by the chill of the mountain spring. There was only a faint odor of meat turning rotten.
How did the bridal survive?
Asked Lair after he'd cleared a space around the blackened skull of the horse.
There are spells that only attack the living, said Seraph. I think that the damage to the bridle was secondary. The spell burnt the horse, and the burning horse burnt the bridle in turn.
Hold up. There's the saddle blanket.
Part of it, anyway. Where the saddle had been was gone, leaving only a black scorch mark on Frost's back. She knelt and touched the cloth. Nothing. She whispered words of power, but they slid past the saddle blanket and sank deeply into the soil as if something sucked them down and ate them. And deep below the surface of the earth, something very old stirred, then subsided, its sleep too deep to be awakened so easily. Cautiously, she withdrew her magic, letting it die down until it no longer fed whatever it was that waited beneath. She looked again at the flat-topped stone and saw that it could have served as an altar. She felt the dirt again and looked at the deep green grass. Blood had once flowed over the altar, enough blood that generations later, the grass still fed upon it. Hanea had been right. There was old magic here, older than Shadow's Blight. This was not a blighted place. If any mage tried to set a trap here, the magic would be eaten by the same thing that had eaten hers.
Mother?
Lair asked, pausing in his steady pace to look at her.
Something's waiting here, she said. But it had nothing to do with any recent deaths. It'll likely lie here until your grandchildren are dust, unless it's awakened.
What about the blanket?
Seraph shook her head.
Nothing. I need the skull. I'll be able to tell if it's tears.
His shovel hesitated before he resumed his search, widening the cleared space around the horse. Seraph cleaned the dirt from her fingertips absently and watched as Lair at last unearthed a fire-blackened human skull set near the horse's neck bones. Gently, Lair took the grim thing into his hands and handed it to her. Seraph stood